Okay, let's come to order, please. Welcome to the September 12th PUD Commission meeting. Later, it'll be a joint meeting with the County Commissioners. And, of course, we are virtual. So we start this with getting comments from the public. So if you have any comment, let T know, and we'll get you in.
Yes, if anyone has any public comments they would like to give at this time, please state your name or raise your hand.
I don't see any hands up, T.
I see no hands either.
Okay, Sean, I think we have one agenda revision. Could you fill us in on that?
Actually, we just had a hand raised, Will.
Oh, which one? Okay. All right, Ed, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry about jumping in there so late. Hey, I just want to, you're having this joint meeting with the County Commission today, so I just wanted to point out here on the West End an appreciation for a project that has been completed in less than a year out here in the Clallam Bay area, and the PUD joining in with the Clallam Fire District 5 to put in place a amateur radio station for emergency and power outage communications. I just want to report to you and the county commissioners this valuable tool for communication and to let you as commissioners know that you now have a gap filler through the use of this equipment as an example of the water station on the Hoco River can now communicate. They can use the handheld to communicate straight back to the Carlsberg office there via this station. So very much appreciated out here. I do appreciate greatly the ability of the PUD, the Fire District, the Port of Port Angeles, and the Clallam County Amateur Radio Club to put this project together, test it out, and get it running within less than a year. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ed. Are there other questions or comments? Okay, we'll move on. Sean, we were talking about agenda revisions. Sean, you've frozen. I can't. Uh-oh. See, can you check on Sean? His video is frozen up and he's muted.
Yes, I will.
Sometimes I wish I had someone to check on my brain when it does that.
Yeah. Little shock treatment, maybe. Let's give Sean a minute to get back on.
Hey, Will, this is Jim.
Hi, Jim.
I can't see on my screen. Are the county commissioners on at the moment, or I can't tell from the view who's there.
I see two of them. I see Mark and Randy.
All right.
Can you see them?
I'm here as well, thanks.
Oh, okay, great.
Okay. Will, this is T. Sean is working on getting going here. He's had a little problem with his video. He wanted to say that item B is going to be a PNGC stakeholder update, and he will give that.
Okay, good. And where on the agenda do we want to put that one?
I believe he said that was going to be B.
B, okay. Okay, thank you. All right, moving on to the approval of the consent agenda. We have five items there, which were sent out previously to the commissioners and to the public. Do we have a motion or comments or questions on those items?
I have a comment. I've noticed that I'm not sure if it's every month, but when we do remove delinquent accounts, they're typically in the $10,000 to $15,000 range. I'm wondering if there's a pattern, or is there anything we can learn from these delinquent accounts that would help us in the future?
They always look at which area is in the lead or in the lagging, and that's kind of an indicator of what's going on in that area. But any comments from staff? What are we having?
Oh, hi, Rick. Can you hear me? It's Ruth.
Yeah.
Oh, hi, Ruth. Yeah.
Okay. I don't think there's any trend necessarily. The accounts are reviewed monthly, and there's several steps taken to recover the monies, and then there's the eventual, you know, turning it over to the collection agency. So maybe I misunderstood the question, but there isn't. I mean, we're taking all actions we can take to collect those monies.
I guess where I'm going with that is that, you know, when we have delinquent accounts, that means all the other ratepayers get to pick up the bill for that party. On the other hand, it means that there's a family in distress and no longer potentially even homed. And it hurts my heart to see that, and I every month or whenever I see these things up there, I find it disturbing, and I guess I'm just looking or hoping that there might be some other red, you know, that this is a red flag that maybe we can initiate some processes or procedures to help out the family or I'm not sure I know that where we can go with this, but like I said, it just hurts my heart to see the delinquent accounts and the implications that go along with that.
Yes, for sure. And we, I think we do a great job of referring our customers to different agencies. And then we also have, you know, our low income program that's now administered by OLECAP. And so we've been able to leverage their services, and they're able to connect customers to different programs like LIHEAP and I'm going to totally blank on the others, but then we also have our program that we offer. So we definitely try to connect customers to the different agencies and resources available.
Well, maybe Ruth, in the future, it would make me feel better about things if we were to maybe give presentations periodically about how the PUD is reaching out to help those that are having problems, so that I see that the other side of the coin as well.
That's a great idea. Thanks, Rick.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. Under CETA, there will be provisions for low-income ratepayers. It'll be interesting to see how this picture will change at that point.
Good point, Will.
Okay, other questions or comments on the consent agenda?
I move that we accept the consent agenda.
I second the motion.
Been moved and seconded to accept the consent agenda for September the 12th, 2022. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, moving on to business items. Our first item is discussion of the Carlsberg Water Rights Expansion and 2023 Clallam PUD Draft Strategic Plan. So welcome, County Commissioners. And let's see, is this going to be an open discussion? Are we going to have a discussion leader, or what are we doing? Maybe it'd be better if the county commissioners voice their concerns and questions, and then we can go from there.
Sure. Well, I'll go ahead and start. Thank you very much for the opportunity to allow us to join you for part of your meeting today. We really appreciate it. And as I'm sure you are all aware, you know, we've been working collectively for many years now on an effort to jointly expand the PUD's water rights as it relates to the Carlsberg Urban Growth Area, so that we can see to it that water service is available throughout the urban growth area. And that effort has had some fits and starts over the years. We did discuss this in detail at our last joint meeting, and at that time determined that it continued to make sense to work on a more formal plan for how we're going to move forward. As I recall, the PUD and UPUD commissioners really wanted to understand what kind of skin in the game or what sort of commitment the county actually had or was willing to make with regard to this process. And so we thought that today would be a good opportunity, perhaps for a brief update. Our respective staffs have developed a draft memorandum of understanding that I think does a pretty good job of capturing our mutual interests, our individual interests, our shared interests. So we thought that this would be an opportunity to ask questions and or provide some reflection on that MOU, provide direction to our respective staffs, hopefully to move forward and complete that and bring it through our respective processes for our signatures. And then, most specifically, one of the things that we talked about last time was, is there an opportunity for, given the amount of work and the investment and the path that we're on here, for the PUD commissioners to consider revising your policy as it relates to your current existing water right, so that we can start to work with all of the developers who are interested in making more housing available in our county. And of course, that is really the commissioners, the county commissioners' biggest interest here is doing everything that we can to try and work with our partners to effect some change in allowing for more housing in the community. So that's sort of what we were hoping for. We do have a couple of staff members present from the county, and I know Tom Martin is here as well. If it would make sense to spend a couple of minutes sort of highlighting the most important aspects of the MOU, that would be one potential next step.
Sounds good. So, Tom, are you on there, or do we want to hear from the county representatives?
I'm here.
Okay.
Well, the MOU, like Commissioner Ozias said, includes our shared goals, or each party's individual interests, and where we see mutual interests. And, for effective collaboration to continue, this is a necessary document to be able to understand one another's interests, to see the problem from each other's perspectives. And so that lays the groundwork for developing solutions that we can all live with, that we can all be internally committed to, that meets hopefully all of our mutual interests and maybe some of our individual interests as well. So I like to say too that it's a pretty darn major accomplishment to have this MOU in place and to be able to get to this point and understand one another's interests and to develop common ground. So that's a great foundation to work from, something that I think we've been missing for quite a while as we've gone through our fits and starts over the years. And so I'm very optimistic about moving forward with a mutual interest-based approach. So with that, the staff, Steve Gray and I, and maybe Carol Creasy as well, presented the MOU, the draft final, to each of our respective commissions a couple weeks ago, and maybe on the 22nd of August. So you've had time, both sets of commissioners have time to review it. And I really think it's time for the commissioners to take it from here.
So, Tom, the sticking points in the past has been water right is built based on full build-out of the LUD, and the PUD has taken a position we want to protect the pioneers in the LUD. How is this MOU differ from that?
Well, that's our interest. And
well,
I
know that.
For a long time, and so that's been listed as one of our interests, as well as...
Okay, so that's, yeah, good.
Well, that's the sticking point, though, that the that we believe we want to keep the water rights before we release them. We want other water rights to replace the ones that we'd be giving up.
And I believe the county has made the commitment to assist us in that, securing those water rights. So,
yes, if I may. Commissioners, yes, that's absolutely right. I believe that the county has been supporting and the PUD's water right application for additional water rights. It goes back to maybe 2006, if I remember. Tom would tell me if I have that date wrong. And I wholeheartedly agree with Tom that this MOU is a significant accomplishment and reflective of a lot of work understanding and identifying what each other's mutual interests are, what our individual interests are, and what it looks like to work together collaboratively to affect change. And so, yes, it was this agreement was presented to the county commissioners. I believe we are ready to go ahead and approve the MOU as it reads. If there are concerns, not that we anticipate doing this today because it's your meeting, but assuming that the PUD commissioners were ready to move forward with execution of this MOU, the county commissioners are as well, because we really do see this as an important step. And as I think you're aware, the county will continue to work with the PUD to help move this water right application forward. As you're aware, we have a mitigation plan that we are prepared to present to the Department of Ecology. We need the support of all of our other local stakeholders in order for the Department of Ecology I anticipate that we will need the support of other stakeholders like the Jamestown Squam Tribe and the irrigators, et cetera, in order to eventually have that mitigation plan and new water right approved. But in the short term, I think for the county, the sticking point has been not a disagreement with the long-term need to secure more water right. We've invested just in hard costs somewhere, close to $700,000 in digging the new deep well into the deep aquifer. When you add staff time and consultant time and other costs, I think the county has spent well over $1 million so far in helping to secure this additional water right for the PUD. So we are committed to doing so. But of course, the sticking point here in the short term is that there's a lot of pent-up demand for development. I think our Department of Community Development is aware of up to as many as 200 new units that could be built in the portions of the Carlsberg urban growth area that are not currently served by the PUD water right. So in addition to this MOU, and we see signing this as the first step and really an acknowledgement of the formal relationship that we've been developing over the number of years here. But in conjunction with that, if there is an opportunity for the PUD to work within its existing water right, which is, according to my understanding, is there's a significant portion of that existing water right that's still unallocated, that if there could be some accommodation, given the investment in this effort, given the investment in developing this MOU, given the dollars that have been invested in the actual well, and given our mutual desire to move forward with a successful application to the Department of Ecology, that If there is a short-term action that can be taken with the existing water right that would allow for more housing development within the currently unserved portions of the Carlsberg UGA, that is the most helpful thing that we could accomplish here in the short term that I don't think is going to impact the long-term goal of securing more water right. And in fact, and you know, Tom and Carol and others could speak more knowledgeably to this, but I believe that the Department of Ecology would likely look favorably upon such a concept. So I hope that makes sense. I know I've been sort of talking for a couple minutes here, but ultimately I want to reassure that yes, we are actively partnering in securing additional water right, and B, we really could use some flexibility within the existing water right.
Well, like you pointed out, water rights processing moves at a snail's pace. So this is kind of a chicken and egg type situation where we use our existing water right and with the hope of procuring additional water rights in the future, but we don't know how long that's going to take or whatever. So it's kind of a dilemma, actually. But let me ask another question. We previously had an interlocal agreement with the county. How does this change that interlocal agreement, or does it? Maybe that's a question for you, Tom.
The 2013 interlocal agreement appeared in the district's interests that we want to preserve that agreement going forward. So we don't want it to change. We want to elaborate on that, give it more detail.
Okay, more definition. Good. Thank you. Okay, other comments?
This is Rick. I was going to address Mark on your when you were just comment on the PUD and the city working together, the county working together. I'm hoping that this is the first of many projects that we can potentially work together on. We both have the same goal, which is to make life better for the residents of Clallam County. But I do share Will's concern about giving away a water right before you have one in your pocket. I've been involved a little bit in the past in water rights, and I'm not sure that saying it moves at a snail pace, that might be an exaggeration of it moving too fast. It is very, very slow, and I must admit I'm pretty reluctant to give up even a part of a water right until we have the other one secured.
So what are we getting back from ecology? If I assume they're not going to expedite new water rights just for us, but what do we think is going to be the time interval involved here, or do we know? You never really know with ecology, but anyway. Tom, can you shed some light on that?
Well, the next step with the Department of Ecology actually is to consider all the input on the mitigation plan. And then we like to go forward with what's called a cost reimbursement agreement with ecology, where ecology does not have the staff resources to process water aid applications. So they have a pool of consultants that they can draw upon and they can hire to process water aids. So we have to enter into an agreement with them, and we'll most likely be using our existing consultant, Robinson Noble. But that hasn't been determined yet by ecology. That's their call. So there's lots of steps in there. There's legal prerequisites to getting the water right, and they are listed in the MOU as well.
Okay, thank you. So this consultant, who pays for that? Is that going to be a joint PUD county obligation or what?
Well, it's part of the process of acquiring a water rate.
Yeah, well, that's right. But who pays?
Well, in 2013, ILA, to me, indicates that it would be the county's responsibility for that.
Okay, good.
They already hired Robinson Noble already to do a lot of the technical studies that go into the review by, you know, the final review, which is called a report of examination. Once that's done, that report of examination is done, ecologists can review it, and they'll make the decision on the water rate. And then there will be an appeal process after that. So the county has already done a lot already in hiring Robinson Noble to do all the hydrogeological studies to help design the well, oversee the drilling, and prepare the mitigation plan. So now we have all these in our pocket and we can go forward. But we still need the comments from the rest of the stakeholders and water managers in the Dungeness Basin. And, you know, the key one is from the Jamestown Skyline Tribe.
Yeah.
And, once we get all the requirements lined up and into ecology, do you have a guesstimate of the time frame we're looking at? Are we talking weeks, months, years?
I've tried to guess before, and I've been wrong. So I'm going to refrain on switching.
Just say years, Tom. I'm sorry. Okay, other comments or discussion on this issue? I think what we need to do is the PUD Commission needs to discuss this and then decide whether to execute the MOU or not.
Thank you. I would like to echo my previous comment that if we are going to be successful in what we're talking about here I hope so, given the amount of effort and public dollars that have gone into getting us to this point. This MOU is reflective of a tremendous amount of work and effort on Tom's behalf, on Carol's behalf, on our respective organizations' behalf, and it would be a significant roadblock if we are not able to move forward with adoption of this MOU. If there are specific concerns about any of the language that exists in the MOU, then I'm confident that our staffs can work together to iron those out. But I really commend our respective teams on the language that they've arrived upon here. It's a really important building block. And again, I want to make sure that all of the PUD commissioners understand that the county is has put north of $1 million already into the assistance of securing this additional water right on the PUD's behalf, because we understand it's important to you as an organization, and it's important to for the full development of the Carlsberg Urban Growth Area one of these days. So we are 100% committed to what we agreed to in that 2013 interlocal and to the path that's outlined here. Now, the issue that the Department of Ecology has, and the issue to a similar extent that the Jamestown Squalum Tribe has, at least from the comments that we've received at public meetings where we've talked about this, is concern that so much of the PUD's existing water right remains unused that sort of jeopardizes the the desire or the ability to move forward with granting existing water right. And so if we're not able to accomplish that, you know, if the Department of Ecology doesn't agree to the mitigation plan that we put forward, if there are objections from other partners that preclude us from being able to, you know, to move forward, then we're at a standstill unless there is some accommodation by the PUD and by you all in allowing for the usage of some of your existing water right in an expanded service area. And, you know, I think all of the county commissioners understand the position that you're in and the desire to be conservative and to think for the long term. And we want to be supportive of that, which is, again, why we've invested so much in assisting with development of the additional water right. But if we just look at the units that we know are waiting out there to be developed, if they could have access to water, you know, that 200-ish units that I was talking about, we estimate that that represents maybe 20% of the remainder of the 80% of your water rights that you've got left. So, you know, we're talking about a relatively small portion given growth patterns, given the makeup of usage of the existing water right, when you take into account what a large percentage of that, respectively, Olympic Springs uses as compared to residential uses. And when you look at the path that we're on for approval of this mitigation plan, I don't want to leave our meeting today thinking there's any doubt that any of the PUD commissioners understand what we need to do if we want to afford for more housing opportunities for the residents of this county in Carlsbad.
Yeah, I guess my comment would be that this water right belongs to the participants in the LUD, so we need to get more public feedback from them and make them aware of what we're doing here. Yeah, we are all, the county and the PUD, we all want to do what's in the public interest. But, you know, we do need the stakeholders to buy into that. Perhaps we need to do a work session, Sean, and invite the LUD participants to attend that and get their feedback.
Yeah, we can definitely arrange for that, Will.
Okay.
And Will, Randy has his hand raised.
Oh, I'm sorry, Randy. I didn't see it. I'm not good at this.
That's quite all right, Will. I was just going to echo everything Mark said, but the one thing I can absolutely tell you is if we don't collaborate, and by the way, thank you to the PUD and certainly the county staff for working together, but the B part of it, if we all don't form a united front, getting something through Department of Ecology will be next to impossible, and yeah. I just want to underline that. I think we all know that. So dealing with them is difficult at best, and I just think a united front's how we need to get there. So so much for my comment. Thank you.
I fully agree, Randy. Fully agree. Okay, I think we've got a way forward here. The other comments or input on this topic? Okay, well, thank you, County Commissioners, for participating in an interesting conversation. I think, you know, this thing's been lurking out there for a long time. It's time we kind of move forward and did something with it. So let's see where we go from here. Okay, moving on our agenda. The next item is an acceptance memo for completion of purchase order 24550 Forks.
Yeah, I've got a question. The agenda also, I believe, discussed a strategic plan or 2023 strategic plan, if they had any comments on that. So hopefully, if they do, we'd like to hear from them.
Okay, well, I'm sorry. Let's go back and capture that. Do we have comments on the 2023 Clallam PUD draft strategic plan?
Yeah, Will, sorry, Randy, I see you unmuted. Why don't you go ahead? I've been talking a lot.
No, go ahead.
next, and then I was going to make one more comment.
All right. Well, I wanted to say thank you for the opportunity to weigh into your strategic plan. Because of the timing, I don't know that we really had a substantive opportunity to do that. So just speaking more generally, it would be, I would like to understand a little bit better the two primary interests that I have, and I think that more broadly the commissioners have, and Randy and Bill, tell me if I'm off base or missing something here, that maybe you could just speak briefly to how these are considered in your strategic plan, if they are, would be two primary areas. One is, does the strategic plan, how does the strategic plan look forward to more opportunities for local resilience in terms of our energy grid? I know that there's a lot of work going on more broadly in that arena right now, and I'd love to understand with a little more specificity, you know, what the PAD's strategic goals and interests are with regard to local energy resilience, the creation of microgrids, other sorts of technologies that will potentially help us be a more resilient community should there be a significant disaster and a long break from the ability to access BPA power. And the other item that I'd love to hear just your brief thoughts on and how your strategic planning document considers the challenges that we've had attracting businesses here over the last few years that sometimes might require a different mix of power, a different mix of renewables, whatnot, as part of their energy supply. And you know, recognizing that we might need to be a little bit more creative in what we're able to offer in order to attract the businesses of the future to this county, if anyone could address one or both of those topics and how your strategic interests are outlined as a part of your plan in those areas, I would love to hear more about it.
Let me jump in, Mark.
Yeah, go ahead, Rick.
Unavailable power prices are in the low 30s. If you go out and look at the market, it's double that, in the mid 60s. While having resilient power supply on the peninsula would be ideal, I don't think the customers of the PUD are willing to double the price they pay for electricity to get that resilience. Now, it is true that we could put marginally go out and just do a part of our load, but when you're looking at double the power prices, it's hard for me to understand how having resources on the peninsula at double the power rate is going to attract businesses.
I guess I had a little different view of that, as you know. The current power prices at mid-sea and so forth are driven by some, largely the price of gas, which is driven by other factors, you know, beyond just renewables and so forth. And I think what Mark is looking for is, look, we're looking out 10, 20 years in this county in terms of where do we go with the business opportunities that can or cannot unfold. And so I don't think we should get, you know, too hung up on what power prices are today and instead look at where these technologies are going, how they can be optimized with our existing hydropower, and how we can bring these very, you know, the Northwest is really blessed with power possibilities, but it's a matter of bringing them in and harmonizing them in the lowest cost way with hydropower. And so this is why asset management across the board with BPA's assets is important, just like we do on any renewable. You know, we look at them all and we say, what does this one bring us and what's the price and so forth like that. So I would, you know, in a strategic plan, I'd want to be careful about, you know, dictating our discussion and strategy on, you know, what's happening today because of gas prices. So I would encourage the dialogue that Mark is suggesting here is that we
we look at business interest and so forth and try to figure out, you know, what we can do to eliminate some of those objectives. Because notwithstanding what the prices are, there's still a lot of utilities that are buying in big time to wind, solar, and now battery backups with solar and so forth. So I would my suggestion is we lean forward here.
Yeah. Hey, this is John. I would like to share my screen because I think this speaks directly to Mark's comment. So basically, we are aware that there is a lot of public interest among our customers for the development of microgrid and energy alternatives. And although they are not normally cost-effective or cost-viable, there are a large number of grants that are now becoming available or may become available that may make the projects cost-effective for them. So what we did in the strategic plan, we added two strategic initiatives under enhanced customer partnership, 12 and 13. And for this, we're including an initiative to coordinate with the community partners, including PNNL, Tribes, Port, NODC, and EDC regarding customer energy projects, including operational feasibility constraints and the district support of funding opportunities that those customers may be looking into. And this could be via the contribution of technical advice, letters of support, or agreement to coordinate, much like we have done recently with PNNL. In addition to that, it is in the strategic interest of our utility, if we did have a large local North Peninsula generation source, let's say biomass or some other source, it could have the opportunity to help grid stability. And for that reason, it's in our interest to coordinate with community development partners to promote North Olympic Peninsula grid stability generation projects within transmission and regulatory constraints. Now, there's a lot of hurdles, BPA and otherwise, to make this work, but we do intend to be very supportive of such efforts, and we have been. We've actually worked with a generator that evidently it did not line out for them or they had another opportunity. But up to 20 megawatts, we would be very supportive of such efforts. Now, as Rick pointed out, it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to buy the offtake from such generation if the prices are not competitive. But we do have the capability through our lines as well as BPA lines to will such generation to customers who have a greater need for non-carbon sources. So I wanted to focus on these two additions to the strategic plan because I do believe they speak directly to Mark's comment.
I would add to that that the PUD has a history of trying to develop alternate resources all the way from wave energy off of Neo Bay. We participated in the first wind farm to be located west of the Cascades. Those projects didn't pan out because of opposition from environmental and activist groups. And of course, we have the solar farm in Squim. And so, you know, we're doing those things. I think your comment about attracting industry or business has to do with the large single load requirement that Bonneville has. Is that right, Mark?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm told that that's probably not going to change in new contracts that are being proposed. It's the case throughout BPA service territory, so we would have to be an exception to that.
In other words, anywhere they tried to locate in the Bonneville control area, they would face the same restrictions as they would face here in Clallam County.
Yeah, I understand that. And I actually, if it's okay, John, thank you very much for your note there. That is exactly what I was interested in hearing more about. Could you speak in any additional detail about what a grid stabilization project that makes sense, not a specific project, but in general, what would a grid stabilization project that makes sense for the PUD look like? And do you feel that participation in all of the energy planning work groups that's going on right now, is that sufficient to address the need, or is there more work that you think we can or should be doing in that arena?
Yes. So basically, an ideal source on the North Peninsula would be a non-carbon source, preferably one that's dispatchable, meaning it's available, and available when we need it. Even if the power was being exported to, let's say, California or other locations in this region, you know, even though the power is technically being exported, it would stabilize our grid. So what are the operational limitations? Now, there is a roadblock at the 20-megawatt level. If we go above 20 megawatts, that would require, if it's interconnected with our system, that we fall under the NERC registration for load-serving energy as well as potentially transmission operator-owner requirements. And if we were going to do that, and it was through our system, it would require us to initiate a 24/7 system operations. That is a big dollar cost for us. That's 24/7 round the clock staffing for basically operation of the electric system. Now, if they interconnected with BPA, that would, BPA maintains a 24/7 system operations, so it alleviates that problem. But it does present, if it's above, I believe, 20 megawatts, it will make the BPA system in the North Peninsula in our area subject to identification or being captured as part of the bulk electric system. And that introduces numerous regulatory controls that BPA currently doesn't have. So that 20 megawatts is basically what I would call the cap on the generation for the North Peninsula before it gets very, very complicated. Of course, once you get above 200 kW or 1 megawatt especially, it does require an interconnect and substantial planning on BPA's part to integrate the load within the system. But from our view, a 20-megawatt load would be very favorable. And I want to also, in our strategic plan this time, we introduced an additional strategic objective to support agency low-income community solar. We're obligated to interconnect in a net metering arrangement for community solar up to 100 kW, and for low-income community solar, we've determined it's in our advantage to do so up to 200 kW if they're situated at locations where we can offtake the load. The reason for this, and these are agencies that assist low-income customers, it alleviates a legislated requirement or goal to alleviate energy assistance need for our area, meaning we will go the extra mile in providing support and assistance and interconnection for agency community solar design where the offtake is devoted to low-income customers. And that was incorporated in our strategic plan this time as well. So I hope I answered your question and pointed out another point in our strategic plan that we recently made a change to try to encapsulate that advantage we would have for low-income community solar.
Yeah,
and the state is going to be given large grants to eligible agencies, and there are numerous eligible agencies in our service territory who can take advantage of that. And the big dollars are going to be released starting next year, I believe, millions of dollars, potentially $1 million for our area.
John, thank you very much. Is that 20 megawatt threshold in total for the PUD service area for the county, or is that per project?
That's per interconnect project.
Per project. All right. Well, that's really a helpful metric. Thank you very much. And thank you for the additional detail. Do you feel that the participation in the work groups that have just sprung up and in this effort is that enough to get at the nut we're working to crack here?
I think all interests or customers, it's better to be aligned rather than several dozen customers independently pursuing objectives. It would be advantageous for such customers to have an awareness of what's going on in total. So, yes, unfortunately, I did miss the meeting last week for the reliability, but on the decarbonization meeting that's planned, I will attend that. And we will be participating in a North Peninsula presentation in early November. Yeah. For interested customers to kind of lay out some of these technical issues that people need to be thinking about and maybe come up with new ideas or new ways of approaching the local interest in microgrids and such.
Thank you, John.
So, John, at what point was one of these projects become a dedicated resource where you would have to forego hydropower?
Well, that's a good thing about it. So basically, if someone came in here with, let's say, a biomass project, which I believe there was a company that was interested about 18 months ago, but evidently they located elsewhere. It wasn't due to any constraints we had, but we would not have to do the offtake for that power and dedicate where we lose low-cost BPA. Now, over the next two decades, I do believe that almost all BPA customers are going to have substantial growth due to electric vehicles. In our county, we've given presentations on that where the growth could be as much as 25%. Now, BPA is not going to have Tier 1 supply to serve those loads. So we would be looking at Tier 2 supply, which is based on a market rate. And market rates are relatively high now, and they're above the cost of some renewable alternatives. So we are going to have to probably at some point in time give consideration to alternate sources. And if there was one locally that was cost competitive with Tier 2, we would take a look at that for serving above contract high watermark load.
I kind of go back to the Shawa biomass project that they did offer us power back years ago at $90, which was compared to $34 hydro, it wasn't attractive. What was I going to ask? Give me a minute. Anybody else have a comment?
You need Teresa to go shake your brain.
Yeah, I need that shock treatment, I think. So anyway.
If it's all right, Will, I'd like to just make one more comment, not directly related to the prior discussion, but it just is to help emphasize the need for collaboration amongst all of us. As many of you may have participated or not, when Derek Hilmer got on to talk about the Recompete Act, which is going to be $100 million allocated to 10 communities over 5 years, each community $100 million, so a very significant amount. The goal is, of course, to increase prime age employment in those ages 25 to 34, and it can include infrastructure, business assistance, housing, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to take a collaboration of all the major entities in this county if we go forward with that program or request. And I just want to help emphasize the fact that we all need to work together, because if we don't, we would not certainly qualify for that. So you'll see more of this coming forward. So thank you. Off the subject.
Good. Thank you, Randy. I think we're all on the same page as far as working together. you know, John's description of resource dispatchable 24/7, and what comes to mind is a small nuclear reactor. There's a lot of acceptance of nuclear energy these days. I'm not too sure that locally that would be the case. Anyway, I'd like to hear ideas on that one. Uh-oh. I said the wrong word. Okay, other comments? Any more discussion on the strategic plan?
Hi, this is Bill Peach.
Oh, hi, Bill.
Hi. Two thoughts I'd like to share. One, I certainly appreciate the PUG's approach to holding down the cost of energy. You know, we'll take a look at opportunities as they develop for alternative energy sources. But I can tell you that the cost of energy is a big deal to especially households that don't have a lot of income. The second point, relative to our previous discussion, I like the idea that you tossed out for a conversation with the local utility district as to allocation of water rights, and certainly support that if you'd be kind enough to keep us informed on when that occurs. I know for a fact I'd love to sit in and listen to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Okay, if no other comments, we'll move on to our next agenda item. I think this has been very productive. I think we probably need to do this more frequently and talk about issues from the county perspective and the PUD.
Thank you for making time for us, Commissioners.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Will.
Okay, thanks, Rosas.
Thank you.
Our next item is acceptance memo for completion of purchase order 24550 Forks Pole Yard Grading and Resurfacing. Terry, are you on?
Yeah, real quick, Will. I think I cut out before when you had the agenda revisions. I just want to make sure you captured the two that I gave you.
No, let's give me those again.
Okay, so after the BPA post 28 contract, we'll have an RDC and rate case update. And then PNGC stakeholder group discussion.
Okay, great. Okay, Terry, go ahead.
Good afternoon. So I'm here today to ask the commissioners to accept the work is complete concerning the purchase order number 24550 for grading and surfacing work that has been completed by Two Grade LLC in preparation for the installation of a pole yard at the Forks Operations Center. The project consisted of all necessary services, labor, and materials required to strip, grade, stockpile, and compact the pole yard area at the Forks Operations Center to prepare the area for future storing and prepping of power poles. The project was started on August 16, 2022, and was completed on August 23, 2022. The total contract cost was $46,683.88, including Washington State sales tax. Thank you, and I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have.
Terry, this is Rick.
Hi, Rick.
We've been doing a lot of work out at Forks. Is all the work done now?
So, all of the grading work is done, that was expected by Two Grade. They got the sod and stuff off the top. They set grade, they brought in gravel for that, and they got it all compacted. Now our crews are installing ecology blocks for racking to store the poles on to keep them off the ground and accessible and to keep them stacked rather than, you know, falling out of that pile. So the guys are building that stuff now. We're not far away from storing our poles there, but the grade work has been done.
And there was work on a substation as well, and that's all completed. Once you get this yard done, is that all the work that needs to be done in Forks area?
No, the work at the substations is ongoing. There's quite a lot of work altogether going on, and there are different facilities. The two substations are at the old Forks Operations Center, and this pole yard is being built at the new Forks Operations Center.
Okay.
And so they are kind of two separate things, but Two Grade is doing the groundwork for both of them. And right now the fencing is just about complete. They're bringing in some new rock and stuff over at the substations, but there will be ongoing work there for another probably 6 or 8 months, is my guess. We're waiting for a doghouse to come in and some other things. So we're kind of gaining our materials for that project as things have been slower than expected.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Terry.
You bet.
Supply chain issues, I take it. Okay, further discussion, questions, or do we have a motion?
I move that we accept memo of completion PO24550 for the Forks Pole Yard.
I second the motion.
Move and second to accept authorization of acceptance memo for completion of purchase order number 24550 for the grading and resurfacing of the Forks Pole Yard at 241 Industrial Center in Forks. All work under this purchase order was completed by Two Grade LLC on August 23, 2022, for a total contract amount of $46,683.88, including Washington State sales tax. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, the motion passes.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, thanks, Terry.
Let's have some good news.
I'm sorry, I thought this was all good news.
We got some good news coming up.
Okay, good. Okay, resolution 2248-22 establishing the current electric service regulations and requirements and rescinding resolution 2239-22. Colin, you have that one.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner Purser. Just to recap, if approved, resolution 2248-22 will eliminate construction cost sharing regulations from our electric service regulations. Existing customers that have paid for construction before the effective date of the resolution will not be affected by the removal of this program. This will only affect customers that submit paid construction estimates on or after September 19th when it becomes effective. So that means that existing people that have signed agreements to have sharing for 7 years will still have access to that. At the August 8th meeting is when we discussed the benefits of removing the sharing program. And on August 9th, we posted to the website the sharing edits and request for public comment. And we have not received any in that time period. Removing the sharing program, staff believes will be a benefit to our department. We average about 5 sharing payouts a year, but we maintain records for hundreds of customers. The employee time dedicated to this program costs more than the benefits that customers receive by a large margin. This gives us the opportunity to reduce paperwork and free up an employee to do other work. We also went out and surveyed other PUDs in a few municipalities, and about half had no sharing programs, and 2 had eliminated sharing programs, and they had cited legal issues as to reason for removing them. So with that, if you have any questions, let me know. Thanks.
So with this, the 7-year time horizon goes away for sharing, is it right?
That's correct. For any new customers. Yeah. Yeah, existing customers will not.
Not be affected. Okay.
Yeah.
Comments, questions?
I move that we accept resolution 2248-22.
I second the motion.
It's been moved and seconded for approval of resolution 2248-22 establishing the current electric service regulations and requirements and rescinding resolution 2239-22. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Next item is resolution 2249-22, authorizing disposable surplus property. Colin, you're up again.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Staff requests that Commission pass resolution 2249-22, authorizing disposable surplus property. The transformer in question is a 5,000 kVA step-down transformer, which is about 50 years old, and it's really no longer useful to the PUD, and it needs repair. We We're lucky enough to find a refurbisher who was willing to pay us to take the unit. And so that's the direction we'd like to go. We solicited multiple companies, and we had kind of a wide range. One company came back, wanted to charge us nearly $8,000 to dispose of it. So I think we found a good solution here. And the refurbisher is willing to pay $6,000, but we have to take care of the crane operations due to its location. Where we need to remove the unit is near power lines. So we are taking care of the cost for the crane, and so you see the resultant amount of money that we think that the unit's worth after.
So this $3,760 is the net?
Correct.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Okay, questions, comments?
I move that we accept Resolution 2249-22, authorizing the disposal of surplus property.
I second the motion.
Moved and seconded for approval of Resolution Number 2249-22, authorizing disposal of surplus property consisting of an obsolete 50-year-old 5,000 kVA step transformer. The item is valued at $3,760. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we're moving right along.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Colin. All right, our next item is BPA post-2028 contract discussion. Do we have any new information there?
I don't think there's been any meetings, has there? Or if there is, I missed it.
No.
I haven't.
I'm sorry, Jim. What?
I haven't had any meetings or contacts or discussions about it.
Yeah, there's no scuttlebutt there. Okay, moving on to correspondence. Oh, I'm sorry. RPC rate case. Sean, do you have that one?
Yeah, John and I will do this one. John's going to give a presentation real quick first before I jump in.
John, you must be muted.
This is the good news I was talking about.
Yeah. It's so good, John is choked up.
I'm definitely choked up. So basically, there has been some discussions on BPA, their reserves, and some WAPAG, and we're encapsulating this into a presentation called Power Supply Outlook, Reserve Distribution Clause and BP 24 Rate Case. So everyone see the this on the screen?
Yeah, we can see it.
Okay, so BPA Financial Outlook. In August, BPA announced projected revenues will trigger the rate case maximum reserve distribution clause, RDC, for fiscal year 2023. Now, the RDC is the exact opposite of the cost recovery adjustment clause, or the CRAC, which was discussed and feared for several rate cases prior to BP 20. So as of August, BPA forecast reserves are $718 million above the $600 million 120-day cash threshold to trigger the RDC. So even after the maximum $500 million RDC, BPA reserves will be $218 million above the threshold. And for fiscal year 2022, we had a very small RDC of $13.7 million. So it's increased from $13.7 to $500 million in total. So for the rate case maximum $500 million RDC, BPA is proposing $250 million to rate relief for preference customers. They're also looking at expending $200 million for debt reduction and revenue financing of capital, and $50 million in advance, what they're calling advance payment for fish and wildlife. A lot of BPA customers, including those in WAPAG, want to negotiate a larger allocation for rate relief of up to $400 million, and also limit the administrator discretion in the future contract. Those at WAPAG, including us,
think that the administrator discretion should be a little more narrow. But as it is now, BPA is proposing a $250 million rate relief for preference customers.
So, John, or is WAPAC saying going forward in new contracts, limit the discretion of the administrator, or are they talking about this go-around?
Okay, they're talking about countering for this time around of going back and saying we want $400 million. And whether we get $400 million or $250 million or something in between, we just don't know. It's still up to the BPA administrator.
Well, I would vote for $400 million to give ratepayers some relief myself.
Yeah, and there's going to be relief to $250, but we've already discussed within WAPAG, and we signed off on that counterproposal, which is basically universal in public power.
Yeah,
public
no,
power
no surprise there.
Yeah, everyone. Now, I will say that a lot of customers will complain about the BPA debt situation, but when the dollars become available, everyone wants the dollars instead of the debt reduction. So
pay me now.
I'm not sure of the wisdom of that, but in short, for this conversation, the low number is $250
million. And real quick, John, I'll just add, one thing that WAPAG is pushing for also is right now the cap is at $500 million. And they are pushing to have that removed during the next rate case so there would be no cap. And apparently that is the administrator's discretion as well per rate case.
Yeah, so basically, even after the $500 million, they still have a pretty big excess going into the next fiscal year, which does make an RDC more likely for the next fiscal year. So... what's going on here? For 2 years, BPA has been selling above contract high watermark generation into an elevated market, now averaging $70 per megawatt hour per year. In fiscal year 2022, the water year was really just 104% of normal, but the schedule, the early runoff, evidently helped BPA out in their secondary sales. And, for example, last week, BPA, and this was after the August numbers, but last week, BPA exported more than 1.5 average megawatts with prices averaging over 150 megawatt hours due to the California heat wave. So that probably added as much as $40 million over a single week. And this is over and above the $218 million estimate for finishing the fiscal year at the end of this month. So, the BPA is doing pretty well. Okay, what's going on? So, basically, this is a fairly busy plot, but basically, it is the mid-sea rolling annual average over time. And we go back to December of 2012. And you can see that, you know, we're below, this green line is basically the same rolling average tier one rate. So basically, there's some periods of time that it was escalating back in 2013 and 14. It was projected that we were going to have tier two cost eventually exceeding $60 per megawatt hour. And that simply didn't happen. The prices came back down by, 2014 on this rolling average. And for two rate cases, the market was significantly below BPA Tier 1 rates. And even as you look at this mid-sea rate, even if we add, let's say, an RSS, for shaping and all the things that BPA might do with blocks of power, even if we have this adder, it was still below the tier one rate for BPA until we get into December of 2018. Then we had a cold spell that really rocketed the regional power market and sent it above. And then we came out of that, and with COVID, the declining energy resulted in, once again, market rates below Tier 2. But over the last 18 months, in part due to CETA perhaps, in part due to two events in California in consecutive years, the market price, even in the Northwest, have been substantially elevated. Once again, these are the rolling annual average, and it looks like they're about to break $70 a megawatt hour. And when that happened, BPA makes an awful lot of secondary sales at a fairly good return. And that's what caused their $718 million secondary sales excess, most recently triggering the RDC. So, that's where BPA's at. And this is why we're getting an RDC. And we got a smaller one last year, but their financials are looking pretty good as of today and going into the next fiscal year.
Well, that is indeed good news, John. That's great. It kind of dispels that idea that BPA is going broke, so that's good.
Well, I mean, feast and famine, so basically.
Yeah, I know. It's,
it's been going on for 18 months, and it's not turning around yet. So what does this mean for us? The Clallam portion of the RDC is expected to be $3.4 million. This is going to be paid in 10 installments between December 22 and October 23. And although BPA costs have considerably increased with, the supply chain issues and labor escalations, they believe, partly due to secondary sales, that revenue is expected to be more than covering the recent increases. So on BP24, the latest proposal for October 2023 through September 2025, BPA for the rate case is proposing a 0% power rate increase and a 0% transmission rate increase. Which,
John, this is Rick.
Yes.
I can understand how the proposed power rate goes to zero. It's unclear to me how this affects the transmission rate.
Yes, and we had the same question, and Tyler did a little bit of a looking into, but because of the elevated market rates, there's a lot more transactions occurring. And through those transactions, BPA transmission becomes more profitable. We're novices in the transmission of power in BPA system, but that's our understanding.
It's sending all the power down to California.
And elsewhere, but yeah, there's a lot of movement of power from the Pacific Northwest when California has adequacy problems.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? Okay.
Well, did you have a question, Rick? I'm sorry.
I just said good news.
Yeah. I think Sean has some information to follow up this with.
Yeah, I just want to add to the presentation here with one caveat to the RDC. So it is for 10 months. It'll start in December and end of September of next year. And as John mentioned, BPA is going to have a 0% rate increase slated for power and transmission. But if the RDC does end, that would be equivalent to a 5% rate increase for us. So we're just going to have to navigate this next year really carefully and watch our eye on secondary sales for BPA and see what they're going to have for the following fiscal year. However, having said that, we have been doing a lot with our budget recently. We've been very strict and stringent on adhering to our strategic plan. We've had strong fiscal management and internal controls. And unprecedented success of BPA's recent financials. We would like to cancel our already approved rate increase for next year of 2.25%. And actually, based on our current analysis of the budget, we'd actually like to reduce our kilowatt hour rate by 0.5% for next year. This would be the first rate decrease at the utility in over 25 years, and so my hat's really off to the board, and our staff are working hard to make sure this happens. We plan to get a press release out in the next week letting the public know that we're going to bring a rescission notice to the board for our 2.25% rate increase for next year, and plan on a rate decrease for electric on the kilowatt hour. And so, Rick, I think that would be the good news that you were looking for. So that's pretty we're pretty excited about that. That's great news for us and the utility and all of our customers.
Absolutely. So the resolution will be at our next meeting?
Yep, we'll bring it at the next meeting to rescind the one that's already been approved and get your authorization to lower the – to actually have a rate decrease.
And when would that rate decrease take effect?
All of our rate increases or decreases take effect April 1st. So that's what our modeling is based off of right now. But we are looking to see if we can do it sooner.
Okay.
Fantastic. Maybe we should just end the meeting right now on a high note. Okay, anything else on that one, Sean or John?
No, that's all we had for that topic.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you very much. All right, the next one, PNG, C, whatever that topic is.
Yeah, the PNG stakeholder group. So we received correspondence from Aaron Urban at PNG C Power, who is looking to put together a group of all BPA's customers that have above rate period high watermark and all of their preference customers. And she put in her email here some of the critical areas that they would like to have discussions on, which would be contract high watermark, system size and augmentation, tier one system allocation and adjustments to net requirements, tier two products, non-federal power integration costs, and election amounts and process. So I just wanted to bring it to the board to see, I believe this is something that we'd like to join, and I just want to see if there is a board member that would prefer to take the lead on this and work with Aaron at PNGC.
I would nominate Rick. He's pretty close to these issues. What, any cost associated with this?
No, I don't believe that there is any cost associated with this. I got the impression that they are trying to work with all BPA customers. I'm assuming most of it will be done virtually, so I don't think there will be any cost at this time.
Sean, did you send us something on this yet? I mean, I'd like to see that what their issue list is that you just rattled off and read a little more into it.
No, I have not sent this out. I actually had the email forwarded to me, so I'm happy to send it to the three commissioners.
All right, thanks.
I didn't hear aggregation as part of that proposed agenda.
Six system size and augmentation.
Oh, that's close enough.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, when do these meetings start, and how do we jump on board?
So she's just trying to put together the group right now, and they haven't set any formal agendas or dates yet. So she's trying to gauge interest at this point, and then once she gets interest, then she will she'll formulate the schedule moving forward.
Well, I think we're interested.
Well, I think it's great that PNGC is coordinating this, and I'd be happy to represent the PUD if the other two commissioners agree.
Yeah, I think I accept your volunteer, Rick. Jim, comments?
I think Jim may have frozen.
I think we lost you, Jim. Okay.
All we need is two of the commissioners to say yes.
Okay, so we'll call that done.
If you're both in agreement, I will get the email out to all three of you commissioners, and I will let Aaron know that Rick would be our delegate for that.
Good. So, Rick, you'll come back and as this evolves. Huh?
Could we have a staff be backup?
Absolutely. Staff could be a backup delegate if that's what the commission wishes.
Yeah, I would advocate for that. It's always good to have two sets of ears to when you're at a meeting to have to get someone else's perspective on what's being said.
John, do you have time to accommodate that?
Yes, I don't think it will take a whole lot of time. So.
Yeah, it's going to be virtual. So, okay, well, good. All right, our next item is correspondence communication. Sean, do we have any?
I have a whole bunch of letters of support for our broadband grant that we have submitted or are going to submit, and I will there's too many here, so I'm just going to forward all of them to you through email so that you can review them at your leisure. But we have got an overwhelming amount of support for our grant to build from Port Angeles to Forks.
Great.
And that's all I had on that.
All right, good. Thank you. Okay, Commissioner reports. Jim, did you have something?
No, I haven't been to any other meetings.
Okay, well, Rick, it's up to you to save us.
Well, I have, nor have I been to any meetings. I would like to comment on that, though. When I became a commissioner, I was surprised by the number of meetings. You know, you've got Waputa, you've got all kinds of organizations, and they're all doing the right thing. But what I found is that I would be spending so much time in meetings, I didn't really have time to, quote-unquote, digest. And after having the, you know, because of August being notorious for vacations, there haven't been a lot of meetings. And therefore, I've really had a chance to go back and read a number of articles and to digest what's going on in the industry. And I could be wrong, but I really think that the electric utility industry is at a point of inflection. And what I mean by that is maybe best characterized by if you think about what our customers think about when they flip a switch. There's no, typically no question about whether the lights are going to come on. And to that extent, I think the utility industry has done such a good job in reliability that now it's just all taken for granted electricity. And the point of inflection that I see happening in the industry, I think might put that in question in the future. For example, because of all the wildfires that we've been having, we're starting to see utilities proactively doing power outages, you know, before the wind starts blowing. And why is that? It's because of the liability that's now being thrown at a lot of utilities because of the wildfires. So now utilities are now being proactive and cutting off the power before the wind starts blowing because they don't want to be sued. That is definitely going to undercut the vision of electricity being, quote-unquote, always on. It's an interesting dilemma, I think, that the industry finds itself in, and it's going to change, I think, the way that we do business and the way that we are perceived in the future. I don't know of how to fix it. I mean, once the genie is out of the bottle, you can't take that back. And it's going to be interesting to see how the liability issue plays out in the future. But I do see it as potentially changing the way the industry has worked from the past. That's my words of wisdom.
Sounds like a lot of home generators or maybe solar panels.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Well, I have been to a lot of meetings, a lot of them not relevant to our cause here, but we did have a work session for the Executive Board of Energy Northwest where we changed some of the leadership. Our Bill Podesta, who's our new nuclear expert, took over as chairman of our Nuclear Safety Committee. And Janet Herron took over. She's ex-Bonneville and has came on the executive board as an outside director about a year ago. She's taken over our compensation subcommittee, so and everything else stayed pretty well constant. I guess the news out of that meeting was that Grant PUD has selected the technology for their small modular reactor that's proposed. They've been looking at NuScale, which was the technology out of Oregon State, and the technology being used by UAMPS over in Idaho. And the alternately X Energy was the other technology. It's well, a bit different, and it was the preferred technology recommended by Energy Northwest. Siting of that facility, they wanted it in Grant County. They have yet to come up with a location that the NRC will license, so that's ongoing. Now, that kind of leaves where do we go from here? The site one, which is next to Columbia Generating Station, is licensed for nuclear activity, and it is got a lot of the infrastructure in place, so that would be an ideal place to site up to two small modular reactors. So we're talking that over with Bonneville. Bonneville is not very excited over new resources, but we've got a meeting at the last week in October. And what I'm going to run up the flagpole is trying to get a number of utilities to buy in to participate in a project there on site one. That would help resolve the resource adequacy issues going on and some of the other issues that we've talked about, like the high price of Tier 2 power. If you look at NuScale, their last they were at $60 a megawatt hour, and they were doing some cost engineering where they were touting that they could bring it down to 55, which would be somewhat below what the anticipated Tier 2 rate would be. So we'll see how that develops, and I'll let you know if anybody salutes when we run it up the flagpole.
Will, is the technology that they settled on, is that the marble fuel?
Yeah, that's the gumball reactor, which is encapsulated in ceramic and graphite. It just cycles the fuel through the reactor, gauges the reactivity at the end, and then rejects any fuel that is not has enough activity. And then you can add fuel online, so you get away from the offline refueling cycles. It's pretty promising. That technology of gas-cooled, graphite-moderated reactor has been tried. There was a plant in Fort St. Grain, Colorado, that used that. It wasn't a gunball reactor, but it was the same high-temperature gas-cooled and graphite-moderated. So it's a pretty well-proven technology. In fact, the NRC on the licensing is going to put it on the fast track, so that's good news. Okay, next item is staff reports. Do we have any?
None today, Will.
Okay. Board action items. T, did we capture any?
Yes, we did, Will. I have. To set up a work session with Carlsborg Water stakeholders in regards to moving the expansion of water rights process forward. To bring a resolution before the board to cancel the planned rate increase and to additionally decrease rates by a half a point based on BPA's great financial rate case. Awesome. And Sean will send an email to the commissioners regarding PMGC stakeholder groups and the assignment of delegates.
Okay, good. All right, thank you. Does the board agree with all those action items? Are we good?
Yes, sir.
Okay, comments from the public. T, do we have any?
If anyone would like to make a public comment at this time, please state your name or raise your hand.
Okay, I don't see any coming up. All right. We do not have an executive session. If there's no other business to come before the board or any further discussion, we will adjourn. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, commissioners.
Okay, thank you, John.